From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Congratulations on making it to Friday. We have been sticking pretty closely to our formula in the few months we've been doing Friday broadcasts, but it's been yet another hectic week in federal politics. So we're going to change things up a little bit and start with our politics roundtable. If you've got thoughts about our format or really any other part of our Friday shows, we always appreciate hearing what you think. So email us, talk@21stshow.org is the address. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Chicago Tribune reporter Dan Petrella about the increasing pace of people seeking asylum being bused to Chicago, which could soon top 1,000 a day, and the tussle among local, state, and federal officials over who should be paying for the response. But we start with national politics, and with us for that, as always, is Linda Kenyon, who covers Washington politics in our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. In order to make our schedules meet, we taped this entire conversation late Thursday afternoon. Linda, how have you been? It's been a long week, I'm sure.
Let's just say nobody I know who works in journalism in the nation's capital has gotten a whole lot of sleep this week.
No.
It's been chaos layered upon chaos, all wrapped into a chaos sandwich.
So, yeah. And I mean, really, it's been quite a year. And I was thinking back to January and the marathon of elections that Speaker McCarthy had to go through just to get that job. Representative Mary Miller of Illinois was one of the holdouts who did not vote for Kevin McCarthy until the last few rounds. And yet, when McCarthy was removed from his post this week, she did vote in favor of keeping McCarthy as Speaker. What do we understand about her reasoning?
Well, Mary Miller from the 15th Congressional District said she's supporting somebody to replace McCarthy now, even though she wanted to keep McCarthy in his seat. Because she feels that, it is time to elect a new speaker. However, when she voted to keep McCarthy in his seat, she did not want the Democrats. She felt the Democrats would be scoring a victory if McCarthy was booted out. As you may know, the final vote on booting House Speaker Kevin McCarthy out of his post was basically every single Republican voting to keep McCarthy, except for 8 members of the House Freedom Caucus, the most conservative members of the Republican Party. And of course, no Democrats voted to keep McCarthy in office, in some ways for the same reason. They felt that McCarthy wasn't keeping his promises to them, and a lot of members of the House Freedom Caucus felt that he wasn't keeping promises to them. So McCarthy was in a lose-lose situation. But in terms of what Mary Miller was concerned about, it was that the Democrats would basically get what they wanted if they got rid of McCarthy. Democrats basically said that's not the case at all. It's just that McCarthy is the Speaker of the House of the majority party, the Republicans who elected him. We don't really have a dog in that hunt because, you know, we're the minority party. But, you know, while there was some perhaps pleasure, there was also some major concern among Democrats that McCarthy was ousted. And certainly a lot of anger among Republicans against this small group of Republicans that basically made this happen.
And none of the three Republicans who represent Illinois in the House actually voted in favor of removing McCarthy, or maybe I should say they all voted to keep McCarthy in the role, even though that vote ultimately failed. But those Republicans are now going in several different directions. You mentioned Congresswoman Mary Miller is supporting Representative, I think, Jim Jordan for the post, but Mike Bost, Darren LaHood, who are they all supporting now?
Well, there are supposedly just 3 so far, but there could be more who are interested in running for House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's seat now that he is no longer the Speaker of the House. And it's interesting to note that of the top 3 that we're hearing so far, and again, there could be more, not one of them wanted McCarthy gone. And when McCarthy first became Speaker of the House, in those 15 grueling rounds of balloting, all of the same 3 who are now considering replacing him were saying quite clearly that they didn't want to be Speaker of the House themselves. Well, now they're reconsidering. And Jim Jordan is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He has said in the past he did not want to be Speaker in the House of the House. He told reporters, look, you guys, you know me, you know what I like to do. I like to do investigations. I like to roll up my sleeves. I like to get down in it and you know, fight the good fight. Well, now he wants to fight the good fight as Speaker of the House, he says, if there's enough people who are willing to support him. And then we have Steve Scalise, who is presently the House Majority Leader. He also did not want to be Speaker of the House originally. And now he's saying, well, okay, I guess I'll give it a shot. He is known as a greater coalition builder, by the way, than Jim Jordan. While they are both extremely conservative, they are a different kind of conservative. Jim Jordan is very argumentative, if you will. He's very aggressive. Steve Scalise has a much more measured approach, and he has more widespread support. And, you know, there is, you know, another one as well. He's Oklahoma's Kevin Hern. Now, Hern, a lot of people don't remember this, but Hern was one of the original members of the House Freedom Caucus. They got a little bit too out there for him, and he left the House Freedom Caucus. So now he's saying, well, okay, maybe I'll give it a try too. Maybe I'll become the next Speaker of the House. So elections could be next week. At least that is the plan. We don't know if it's going to be another grueling 15 rounds of balloting. My guess is that it will go much quicker this time. But of course, past is prologue. Well, it could have, we could be seeing a repeat performance.
Yeah, I am completely out of any sort of predictions game after the last week and a half that we've experienced, because I was expecting a shutdown. I thought McCarthy would hold on to his job. I mean, of course, it's not my role to make predictions, but it just goes to show you cannot predict when there is chaos in the air. Linda Kenyon covers Washington politics for Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being with us. I hope you can get some decent rest soon.
Oh, I hope you are right. Thank you so much, Brian.
It's the 21st show. If you're just joining us, I'm Brian Mackey. We are starting the show off today with our Friday Politics Roundtable, and we turn now to Illinois politics. I should note, the directors of several state agencies announced this week they'll be stepping down from their posts at the end of the year. And that includes Mark Smith, the director of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which is an agency that is so often described as troubled or embattled that it's basically become part of the name. But given the complexity of the issues there, we're going to come back to that in a full conversation in the coming weeks. For now, we turn to the ongoing arrival of asylum seekers in Illinois, Chicago in particular. Governor Pritzker has called on President Biden for help as the pace of arrivals continues to accelerate to levels the city and the state are struggling to keep up with. For the latest on this, we turn to Dan Petrella, who covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. And I should note, we taped our conversation with Dan on Thursday afternoon. Dan, welcome back to the 21st show.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the busing of migrants to Chicago, it's been happening for more than a year now. What has changed in the last few months, is at least in terms of how many people are getting bused to Chicago?
Sure. Yeah. You know, we saw, you know, this first wave of arrivals last August and September, and then things kind of tapered off through the winter and then really started to pick up again around late spring. But recently, just in the last couple of weeks, the pace has accelerated to levels that we have not seen before. Just in the past couple of days, you know, a dozen or more buses arriving a day, each carrying 50 or so migrants on them. State and city officials projecting that that could hit 20 to 25 buses a day. In the coming week or so, you know, that would amount to about 1,000 to 1,250 people per day, which, you know, as of now, since the beginning, about 17,000 migrants have arrived in Chicago. We're looking, if that pace continues, at potentially doubling the number of folks who have arrived in just the matter of a couple of weeks. So it's really become much more acute in the last few weeks or so. And the city is really scrambling to figure out what to do with all of the folks who are arriving. And the state, as you mentioned, is turning to the federal government, really almost begging for more help.
1,000 people a day, potentially, certainly hundreds now. I mean, how how is the city able to keep up, or I guess maybe not keep up with that in Illinois more generally?
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, of that 17,000, there are about 10,000 people as of Thursday morning in city-run shelters in Chicago. And then there are another, you know, more than 3,000 waiting placement in shelters. That's about 2,300 people sleeping in Chicago Police Department stations, another 800 or so at O'Hare. So really, it's just a very, very strenuous situation on the city. And they are looking to find more places to house folks as they arrive, but really have not been able to stand those things up quickly.
Including some talk of like a tent city, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. A couple weeks ago, maybe almost a month ago now, Mayor Johnson proposed this idea of these winterized, weatherized base camps that would be set up in sort of open spaces in the city that have not really been identified or specified. That has been met with some skepticism from the state. And they are now talking about some backup options, potentially collaborating with the state and the county. This is just sort of new here on Thursday. Again, without any details of where these places would be, how they would be set up, how quickly they would be set up. But, you know, it's hard to believe because it's been close to 90 degrees this week here in the Chicago area. But, you know, we're looking at the onset of cold weather pretty soon. And
yeah,
conditions could get a lot more treacherous for folks.
Yeah, even a weatherized tent is, I mean, I don't know. It still sounds like a tent to me. But, you know, Chicago is not the only place where this is happening, right? There are several other cities in the state getting grants to help these asylum seekers now, including Urbana. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, the details so far on this money has been scant. It was in the current year's state budget that started in July, and there's a big push from Chicago to get funding out of the state to help pay for this. You know, Chicago has borne the brunt of this. And so they put some money in, set up a grant program. About 30 million of the 42 million or so that they budgeted ended up going to Chicago. But Joliet area is getting a little bit of money, Elgin, Oak Park, and Urbana a little bit. But what exactly those various locations plan to do with that money is still something, you know, I think we're at least trying to sort out. There's been some controversy in the Joliet area, for example, about whether the city of Joliet is on board with the township using some of that money to help folks that have found their way out there. So it's, you know, it's very small amounts of money. I mean, the city is projecting, you know, that they'll spend by the end of the year hundreds of millions of dollars on the response. And what the state here has given out is about 42 million. So it's, you know, the city's share is about what they're spending in, you know, a week or a couple weeks on the response.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So this brings us to the letter that Governor Pritzker sent to President Biden on Monday. What is he asking for?
He had sort of a laundry list of requests from the White House. One thing was essentially to put one point person in charge of the response, because they say that they've had to deal with a lot of different folks within the administration on trying to get various questions answered and get resources to the state and to the city, which is kind of interesting because the state made similar criticisms of the city earlier on in the process under Mayor Lori Lightfoot that they didn't really have one point person in charge of the city's response. But they're also requesting that the federal government step up and take a more active role in the transportation of migrants from the border. They're basically saying, you know, once people present themselves to Customs and Border Protection and they get, you know, processed, they're just sort of being released. And then it's up to, you know, the governor in Texas or local mayors to, or, you know, non-governmental organizations to find buses for these people and send them to places where they may want to go, like Chicago or New York or elsewhere. So they want the federal government to coordinate that. They would love to have more federal funding to help pay for some of the services they're providing. I think that is a highly unlikely thing to happen anytime soon, given yeah. the high degree of chaos in Washington right now. And then there are a number of other, you know, sort of policy kind of changes that the administration would like to see that they feel could ease the state's response and have the federal government sort of step up and play a more robust role in helping out.
Yeah. All right. Just a couple of seconds left. So maybe just a few sentences. What are you watching for next as this story continues to unfold?
Well, I'm really just trying to figure out, as we were talking about earlier, where all of these people who are arriving are going to stay. You know, it's an unsustainable situation for thousands of people to be sleeping on the floors of police stations in Chicago. You know, there's one shelter that the city and state have been talking about opening up in a former CVS store on the Southwest side that they've been talking about for months and haven't gotten open yet. And it would really take in like the number of people who would arrive on 10 buses. So that's not a long-term or large-scale solution. So really, I think, you know, looking for officials either on the city level or the state level to step up and present what their plan is.
Dan Petrella covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. Dan, always good to catch up with you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.